Welcome to Hey, Remember the 80s? I'm Carrie.
And I'm Joe.
Please remember, we're not professional podcasters or music critics. We're just dreaming that you're singing to us and talking about 80s music.
Oh, boy. Welcome, Carrie.
Welcome to you, Joe.
And welcome to any new listeners or loyal listeners. We found some out in Reston, Virginia, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and Tangerang, Indonesia.
Mm-hmm. Hello welcome. To all those folks.
Hello.
Hello to everyone else. Come find us on Facebook at facebook.com/HRT80S. And we're on Blue Sky as well. Lots of tidbits this week, Joe.
So many, yes, I know. I can't wait.
Let's start off with Rhonda. Listener Rhonda, let us know that there is a signed copy of the We Are the World sheet music in the National Museum of African American History and Culture in D.C. And she posted a picture on our Facebook.
Some pictures. They were great.
It looks like this is Quincy Jones's copy. At the top, it says, Quincy, I something, 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 happy birthday, Lindsay Buckingham.
Good old Lens. Yeah, a lot of Quincy B-Day messages. When was his birthday? We should have looked it up to see if it was right around the time of, but it's in January.
Oh, it's March 14th, 1933. Well,
they're being proactive.
Or he must have asked for people to do that after the fact or something. I don't know. Yeah. But yep, there's tons of signatures on here. It's very cute. Thank you, Rhonda, for pointing that out to us and sharing this.
And that leads into our other big tidbit.
Which is The Greatest Night in Pop, the documentary about the making of We Are the World that premiered on Netflix this past week, and Joe and I both watched it. Joe, you didn't want to talk about it at all until tidbits, so you better spill now.
Okay, well, I guess I should first off, when you talk about the title of it, Dave actually tried to search using the voice-activated remote, and he said, We Are the World, and then Apple Music played the song We Are the World, and he was like, no. So you go to Netflix, it was pretty much the first thing for you since it premiered just this last Monday, so a week ago when this comes out. I just wasn't sure if there was going to be anything new to learn after, you know, reading so much about it. You know, we talk about this song all the time, Carrie, here and on Charlie's, and we've watched the behind the scenes documentary that was on Tubi. We talked about that recently, but I was very, very surprised. I laughed. There were moments that I rewound because they were so good or funny or cute. It was a lot of new information, and that surprised me and it pleased me.
Yeah, I think the best part about it was the talking heads, because I do think most of the footage we were seeing was the same footage that was in the Tubi documentary. I mean, it was the, you know, behind the scenes footage that was being recorded the night of. But it was very interesting to hear Lionel Richie and Sheila E. and like the cameraman that was there.
Richard Wu.
Yeah, give their thoughts about the whole process and everything.
I think obviously Lionel Richie had the most to say since he was so involved in, I mean, everything really, the writing, maybe not the arranging, but he was like the cat wrangler that night, you know?
Yeah.
He was involved in everything. And as someone said in the documentary, there couldn't have been a better person to do it. And I enjoyed they showed footage from the American Music Awards that were that night the recording happened. It was very interesting to see what went down that night. I don't know. Are we doing spoilers?
If people don't want to hear, then they can fast forward a little bit.
I was very surprised to hear the part where Cyndi Lauper at the American Music Awards said to Lionel Richie, I don't think I'm going to come to the recording tonight after all. My boyfriend says he doesn't think this song is going to be a hit.
Yeah, well, I think we kind of knew that guy was a jerk, her boyfriend at the time. Yeah.
He's made many bad choices and predictions back in that era, but good thing that she showed up.
There was a lot of interesting information, especially about Sheila E. talking about how she thought she was going to sing a solo. And at a certain point, she kind of realized, I don't know if it's true or not, but she got the feeling like she wasn't going to have a solo and she was only there because they wanted to try to get Prince there. And so she left. I thought that was a bummer.
It was a, yeah, it was something that was one of the new things I learned. I'm mm-hmm. surprised that no one had a rebuttal or had anything else to add that was behind the scenes. So maybe they were like, they didn't want to be like, yep, that was it.
Pretty much, I guess. It's kind of hard to imagine Prince being involved. I don't know why, but it just doesn't seem like he would fit.
I got to tell you my favorite part of the documentary, and it was kind of this ongoing thread where Tina Turner was really excited about the food that was being delivered for their break. She sang a song called Fish Burger. Yeah. Carrie, what is a fish burger? Do you know?
Well, I assume it just is like a fish fillet, you know, okay. But since it's in the shape of like a burger.
Well, she sang the song for a while, and then I don't know if you caught this, but it's the moment where she's asking, okay, we're recording our solos. Are we supposed to lean into the mic or step up to it? And then kind of this aside moment, she kind of loses interest when they tell her everything that's going on, and she looks and says to someone off camera, is that my fish burger over there?
I didn't catch that.
And then finally, during the credits, when they're showing still photos of that night, there's a glorious picture of Tina taking a big old bite into a fish burger.
She was just there for the food, I guess. And why don't we talk about the person who apparently was just there for the wine?
Oh, my goodness. I was shocked to my core. I didn't know Al Jarreau got down like that.
Charlie had teased for us that there was someone that was drunk at the recording, and I didn't even come up with a guess, but I would have never in a million years guessed that it was Al Jarreau.
You know, here's what I will say about that. Many people talked about how nervous they were and mm-hmm. being around all these mm-hmm. legends and having to perform, especially Huey Lewis, who was given the solo that night mm-hmm. and then also learned he had to do that three-part harmony with Kim Carnes and Cyndi Lauper. He was yeah. shaken, right?
Yes.
He said it multiple times. I'm sure a lot of the people there felt the same way, and I guess maybe that's how Al decided to cope with it. I don't know.
Who knows? I mean, you know, it wasn't like he was like falling down or belligerent, but it was just kind of funny. But yeah, it really seemed like everyone had a good time. Everyone was there for the right reasons, except maybe Waylon Jennings.
Whoops.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. I think it was a really fun watch. And for someone that's not very familiar with We Are the World or didn't watch that documentary on Tubi like we did, I imagine this would be very exciting and lots of new information.
Yeah. And then the last thing I just wanted to say was, it was so touching how Diana Ross was reacting to everything. She was the yeah. first person to get people to sign. She told who? Daryl Hall.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan. Please sign it. And then that started the whole like yearbook signing of mm-hmm. of everyone. And she was most moved. She was crying, didn't want it to end. I thought that was a really sweet moment, especially for someone that people think of would have more diva behavior in a situation like that.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
We're up to the main topic this week. This is another great episode idea from friend of the podcast, Dom. So, na mi hi to him. What does that mean, Carrie?
I think it means thank you.
Oh. He'll let us know. Well, way, way back in episode 5, we talked about some actors of the 80s that ventured into singing and hit the charts. We covered Bruce Willis, Jack Wagner, and others. But Dom suggested that we focus on some ladies who were actresses and singers as well, primarily because he says, unlike some of those actors, these ladies do not shout at you when they're singing. And it's a pretty good idea. And he also provided a list of those actresses turned singers, starting with Gloria Loring. Now, this entry is a little backwards because even though we knew Gloria as an actress in the 80s, she got her start as a folk singer when she was just 14 years old. She married Alan Thicke in 1970 and released several albums throughout that decade. She also performed regularly on television variety shows. In 1977, she charted on the Hot 100 country and AC charts with a song called Brooklyn, released under the pseudonym Cody Jameson. Wonder why she did that.
I don't know. Yeah.
When Thicke wrote the theme song to the TV show Facts of Life in 1979, Gloria sang it. And that's the version we all know and love, right?
Yes.
You know all the words, right?
Of course.
Yeah, here's a clip.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have the facts of life. The facts of life. There's a time you gotta go and show you grow, and now you know about the facts of life. The facts of life.
Gloria joined the soap Days of Our Lives in 1980, playing a character that was a singer. She was a headliner at a local club. And here's a clip of her singing You Were Always on My Mind in character on the show in 1982.
If I made you feel second best, well, I'm sorry I was blind.
What'd you think of that clip?
It was good.
I thought she sounded great.
She really did.
I was ready to not enjoy it, is what I'll say.
I think I've talked before about my mom was a Days watcher, so I watched Days, but I think this is a little before my time. Well, you know, 1980, I would have been two, and 1982, I would have been four.
How old would you have been in 1986?
Anyways, I think I really started watching Days when it was the tail end of her run there. But yeah, she sounded great. I liked it.
I thought so too. Yeah. We had to watch like a 4-minute lead up to it where two men were like mad at each other. It was a little odd.
As I was watching it, I was trying to figure out. I was like, I don't remember any of these characters.
Well, she told the guy, stay sober. And then the other guy showed up with a drink. And I was like, what is happening? And he's like, are you the one who tried to kill me?
Oh, soaps.
Yeah. Well, in 1985, she duetted on the show on the song Friends and Lovers with Carl Anderson.
Let's pause for a moment to talk about Carl Anderson. He portrayed Judas in the Broadway production of Jesus Christ Superstar and then played that role in the movie adaptation. He also signed to Motown Records and eventually released a number of jazz albums in the 80s while still regularly acting in movies and TV. Here he is on a single called Forbidden Lover from 1987 with Nancy Wilson, a noted R&B singer whose career spanned from the 60s to the 90s, not the member of Heart.
You make me crazy. See you everywhere. I want you to be there. I'm in your spell.
Okay, what did you think of Forbidden Lover, Joe?
You know, it wasn't the worst song in the bunch this week.
That's not very high praise.
let's get this out of the way too, because we don't like to do an episode and just basically say these songs are garbage. But the same with the actors turned singers, the actresses turned singers. You also got some stuff that is questionable.
Yeah, it's pretty much all downhill from here. Gloria Loring is definitely the high point.
Oh, she's great. Yeah. Same with the actors and the actresses. You know, when they're famous for TV or movies first, you got to question the motives behind recording the music. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And let's put Gloria Loring outside of this category, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't seem like these people are doing it because they have a story to tell and a gifted voice, and they have to put this music out into the world in order to live. It's more people watch this, they'll buy this, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I thought Forbidden Lover was actually pretty good. I enjoyed it. But back to Gloria and Friends and Lovers. Gloria and Carl recorded the song for release in 1985, but they could not get any record labels to sign on to release it. Eventually, Eddie Rabbit and Juice Newton recorded a version called Both to Each Other. It became a country hit in summer of 1986. Carl and Gloria's version was then in high demand, and after it hit the stores, it shot up to number one on the Adult Contemporary chart and made it to number two on the Hot 100, stuck behind Huey Lewis and the News' Stuck on You.
Yes, it's a chance that we're taking, and somebody's heart may be breaking. Nobody can stop what's inside us. Our love for each other will die.
The song was also included on solo albums Gloria and Carl released that year. Gloria left Days and divorced Alan Thicke that year as well.
Oh, she's starting fresh.
Yes. She did not have chart success with any other single, but here is a taste of the song Falling in Line from her 1988 album, which Dom says is his favorite. Who knew Dom was such a Gloria Loring stan?
This is news to me, but I gotta tell you, I enjoyed that song.
Yeah, spoil for the listeners, I couldn't find the whole song anywhere on YouTube. What I could find was compilation of clips from all the songs on that album. So we only heard like 30 seconds of it. It actually did sound pretty good. I enjoyed it.
Not at all what I expected when I hit play on that, mm-hmm. you know, because I only know Friends and Lovers.
Yes. It was different. It was good.
I gotta say, Friends and Lovers, one of my least favorite songs of the 80s.
That's right. We didn't even really talk about it. I don't care for it much either. I don't mind it as much as I mind some other duets that are really ubiquitous, but, you know.
Yeah, ubiquitous is right, because I'm like, why is it that I don't like the song and I change it when it comes on, and yet I know every ad lib from both artists, you know?
I mean, it was big. It was big back then. Well, Falling in Line was also included in a Disney movie released in 1988 called Rock and Roll Mom, starring Diane Cannon. She played a mom of teenagers that is discovered and becomes a pop star. Very Martha Davis.
I hope Martha Davis got a story by credit on this one. Exactly. And I'm being so serious.
And Dom wanted to know if Joe has this on VHS.
I don't. And you know what's crazy is I've never seen it, but I can picture the video sleeve right now. I looked it up and it's streaming in full on YouTube. When you visit in June, we're going to watch it.
Oh my God. I went to and watched the clip from when Falling in Line was sung in the movie, and I felt like it was tickling something in the back of my brain. I feel like I might have seen it, like, once.
Yeah, you had the Disney Channel, right?
We actually didn't.
Oh.
Remember how they would, like, premiere the movies on Disney, and then they would play them on ABC, like, Wonderful World of Disney?
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm.
I feel like maybe I saw it that way.
Yeah, that's we're watching that.
Well, let's wrap it up on Gloria Loring. She last released an album in 2008, which included a new version of Friends and Lovers recorded with Carl, but he would sadly pass away the next year.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
I gotta say, for Gloria Loring, no one could have sang the Facts of Life theme song like her.
Yeah.
She gets an automatic pass for everything except Friends and Lovers. But like, superstar, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She sang it perfectly. She was perfect.
That show and that song were very much a part of my childhood.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You know, you never think about the faces behind the music, right? But that's Gloria.
Hold on, sis. Talking about Facts of Life. We're on to our next lady, Lisa Welchel. Of course, we all know her as Blair on Facts of Life. Before that, she appeared on the new Mickey Mouse Club for a couple years. She used her fame on Facts to launch a music career singing Christian music. The album All Because of You was released in May of 84, and it featured the single Love Believer. And if you thought she was going to rhyme that with Love Receiver, you're absolutely right. What do you think about that clip?
It's bad. It's real, real bad. I will say, this is a common theme now for the rest of the episode. Did these people take voice lessons? I honestly feel like they just walked into the booth and were like, okay, let me do some takes, because there's no singing to it. It's just monotone and bland. And it's like, what are you doing? And then the song itself, the lyrics are insane.
She really could not sing, and I don't know how I got to this, but on my notes I wrote, she sounds like a drunk baby.
That is actually a good way to describe it.
Yes.
She doesn't have like an adult tone. She sounds like a child.
And there's some slurring going on too.
It's weird. We've talked before, I'm not like a historian on contemporary Christian music, but it doesn't even sound like in line with what was popular with Christian music at the time, you know?
Well, some people were fans, I guess, because the album reached the Billboard Contemporary Christian Album Chart, and she was nominated for a Grammy for Best Inspiration Performance. Didn't know that was a category.
Yeah.
But she lost to Donna Summer. She never recorded another album, but in 2021, she performed the Facts of Life theme song live on the recreation of a Facts episode for the show Live in Front of a Studio Audience. I loved it. I thought she did a great job. I'm pretty sure I teared up when I saw this live. Did you watch it when it aired?
Yeah. I don't think I watched it live, but I definitely watched it on Hulu later. I thought she did such a good job that when I was putting this episode together and I was going to listen to the song Love Believer, I thought she was going to be a good singer. Yeah, I was like, right. What's going on?
Somewhere between those 40 years, I think she found the lessons, right?
She took some singing lessons, yeah. I will also say about Lisa Welchel in that clip, her hair is still gorgeous.
She looked really good, yeah.
I want to know everything she does to her hair. It's just amazing. Anyways, she also competed on Survivor in 2012.
Did you watch that?
No, I'm not a big Survivor watcher. I've seen different seasons, but not that one. I think she came in like second or third, so.
Good for her.
I know. I'm surprised. Lisa was not the only Facts cast member who wanted to be a singing sensation. Tootie got in on that action as well. Kim Fields was the youngest cast member on the show. She was just 10 years old when she debuted, but she had already starred in another sitcom and made guest appearances on Good Times. She released one single in 1984 and both sides charted. He Loves Me, He Loves Me Not made it to number 30 on the dance chart. The other side was an R&B hit called Dear Michael. The titular Michael was Michael Jackson. And ironically, the songwriter Elliot Wilinski had a relationship with the Jackson family and had written Michael's first solo hit, Got to Be There. Here is Kim's plea to MJ. Single peaked at 55 on the R&B chart. Let's stop there and talk about these two songs, Joe.
Great. I'd love to. Let's start with He Loves Me, He Loves Me Not. Can someone say high energy?
It's so weird to me. Like, she's singing, but not really. She's also, like, singing in her head voice the whole time. I don't know if you made it to the end. This was like a 6 minute and 30 second version. But at the very end, she goes like insane. Like she hits this really high. Well, hits is not a fair statement.
I must
statement.
Not have made it. I might have. I was Googling her music career, I think, as I was listening to it. And I'm not sure if I got to that part. But what I heard, I liked. I thought it was good.
I guess it's not as bad as Love Believer, but it was not for me.
I thought it was cute. I thought for her, it was cute.
Well, did you see the album cover, too?
Yeah, with the flowers.
Yeah, but she looks so old and matronly. I'm like, she's a child. She's like 13 years old when this is coming out. It's like, why are they styling her like this? Yeah,
I mean, she was 14, I guess, when she sang Dear Michael, because she even includes the line, do you think 14 years old is too young to get married?
Yeah.
I wonder what his answer would have been.
I hated everything about that song. I know, you know, we're looking at it through a different lens, but that is a bad song. It wasn't even good for the time in terms of, yes.
It was really weird. And did she ever meet him after this?
I'm sure she did. But you know what the crazy thing is that there was a whole storyline on Facts of Life. Remember, Tootie was like the president of the Jermaine Jackson fan club. Yeah.
Oh, some triangle going on.
Yeah. Sneaks out to see him and gets in trouble or whatever. And I don't like this connection between this songwriter who actually knew Michael Jackson and then wrote this crazy song. Like, that's upsetting.
I had seen some comment, too, where it said that, oh, I remember seeing Kim Fields perform Dear Michael on Soul Train in 1984. And I'm like, there's no way. And then I looked and I found on Getty Images, it was like, here's Kim Fields performing Dear Michael on Soul Train. Yeah, I was going to send you the picture, but they said it cost $450 to release it.
Oh, man.
Not good. I would say he loves me, he loves me not. Cute. It's fine. Yes. I would even dance to it if I were a teenager in the 80s at a club. Dear Michael needs to be buried way under the earth's surface, like almost to the core.
It needs to be scrubbed from the history books. That's for sure. Well, one last note on Kim. She has continued to act and direct throughout the years, and she even tried her hand at music again in the late 90s with a group called Impromptu. That's spelled I-M-P-R-O-P space 2. And here she is.
Show some love for Miss Mocha Soul. Give it up.
Mocha Soul, that's me. Speaking my truth into the wind, I'm finally comfortable in my skin. Accepting that having needs doesn't make me weak. Ah, another truth I speak. My sexuality can be your reality. I am me. Mocha Soul.
I thought she was going to sing, but it's like she's just doing spoken word stuff.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, you know, I didn't think it was bad. It's just not the type of music I usually listen to. But, you know, I was like, this is fine.
Yeah.
I like it. She does other stuff. I think she's on a Netflix show currently, The Upshaws. Oh, really?
She was on one of the Housewife shows for a year or two.
That for a year. And yeah. She's like, I ain't coming back. Yeah.
I want good things for Kim Fields. I really do too.
That's the whole point of this. I'm glad she's on a Netflix show that it looks like it just got renewed and is coming back out. Mm. She can act, she can direct, whatever she wants to do. I'm on board. Just not the one song. Next up is an actress who had a big hit in New Zealand. So Dom is very familiar with her pop career. Here in the U.S., not so much. Audrey Landers also started early as a singer, writing and recording a country song when she was just 12. She studied music at Juilliard and then moved to L.A. and landed a role on Dallas when it was in its fourth season. Her character, Afton, sleeps with JR and then gets a job singing in a bar. And here she is singing on the show.
You know what to do.
Carrie, was that a famous song?
I don't think so.
The way that they describe it on the YouTube clip and the way it's done, I'm like, am I supposed to know this? Is this an original?
I don't know. I wonder if it was one of those songs that kind of just became famous because it was performed on Dallas a lot. I don't know. Have we talked about Dallas before?
I've never watched it. Knots Landing is what you might be thinking
of. Yeah, that is. I'm like, you watched one of them. I didn't watch Dallas either, and I don't think my mom did, so I wasn't even absorbing anything by osmosis.
Right, and it's so funny because that's the show everyone talked about, you know? I don't know who anyone is on it. I mean, besides JR.
Yeah, yeah. This was fine. It didn't offend me, but it wasn't Gloria Loring either.
Well, Audrey released her first album in 1983, and the single Manuel Goodbye became that hit that reached number 3 in New Zealand, aided in part by Dom's purchase of the 45 record.
He's really telling all of the stories on himself.
I'm putting it all out there. It also topped the chart in Belgium and South Africa. In the 90s, Audrey created a children's TV show, and she wrote over 250 original songs that were used in the series. She still performs regularly and last released an album in 2010, which I guess was recorded in German?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. I will say that Audrey Landers is a good singer, at least. I mean, she's not for me. And Manuel Goodbye sounds like it is from the 50s, and I have no idea what it was doing being released in 1983.
There's got to be something else going on in New Zealand. Like, was this in a movie or a TV show, or was their president named Manuel at the time? Like, there's got to be some reason that it hit so big, right? But you're right. It was just a total throwback. It sounded 50s, like you said.
The whole storyline is like she wants to let this guy go, but she's having such a hard time. And I'm just like, sister, drop the loser. What is that? What is it? Drop the hero. What is it? What is
drop the zero and get a hero.
Yes, I couldn't think of it.
Speaking of sister, did you know of this actress or her sister, Judy?
I think we talked about this last in the context of Anne Murray, where you would just like see them on shows.
Yeah, you did say that.
That's where I think I would see these two. And I think I would get them confused too, because they kind of look like.
They wanted you to. And I looked at their credits and I'm like, I don't remember watching any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And then, and I can't remember whose, it says, oh, she was also on the Pyramid Game show and she helped someone win $100,000. I'm like, that's it.
Oh, yes.
That's how I know them. That's how I know them, and that's how I know Teresa Ganzel.
That is such a good point. I was saying variety shows, but that's probably was where I saw most of these people.
Pyramid.
Yes.
All the ones that had celebrities. Probably Win, Lose, or Draw later in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, Dom has also included on this list a lady who was acting royalty and literal royalty, Princess Stephanie of Monaco. Dom says she needs no introduction. But I think I have some vague memories of her, but she was certainly not as popular in the States as she was in the rest of the world. Do you remember Princess Stephanie at all?
It's funny that you mentioned and stated it that way, because I had to look at her wiki today and I knew none of this. I didn't know who her parents were. I didn't know about all the stuff that happened in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I knew nothing.
Okay.
I remember seeing the name and pictures in People magazine.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess not being interested enough to read the articles. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not a dig or anything. No. I just, you know, we weren't big royal people.
Yeah. The only reason that I knew her is because she dated Rob Lowe briefly. And I remember whatever Teen Beat or whatever I was seeing her in connection with that.
You were jealous, weren't you? You should have wrote a song, Dear Rob.
I didn't like Rob Lowe. I didn't like him back then. I don't really like him now either. So anyways. Well, Stephanie was born in 1965 to Grace Kelly and the Prince of Monaco. When she was 14, she was in the car with her mother when they had a car accident. Grace died as a result and Stephanie was injured. Rumors swirled that Stephanie had actually been driving the car. She's always denied this and says the accident and those rumors were extremely traumatic.
I'm sure.
No kidding. In her mid-20s, she launched a career as a model and a fashion designer and then self-released her first album as Stephanie. The single Origin, which is French for windstorm, spent 10 weeks at number one on the French chart. Seul le tonnerre résonne, m'emprisonne. English language version called Irresistible was also recorded. That one was not as successful, although it got a lot of play across Europe and reached 84 on the UK chart. So what did you think about this pair?
The French version I listened to first, and I thought, okay, this song's really not giving me anything. And then I heard the English version, and I thought, okay, well, this is giving even less, and it makes the original version sound like a heartfelt anthem. I listened a few times, to be honest. The French version really kind of grew on me.
Okay.
Not the English version so much.
I don't think I listened to either of them enough to grow on me. I didn't mind them. Like, I didn't actively hate them. But yes, it's one of those things where there's not much going on there. She's singing very wispy like this. Mm-hmm. What is that about? Maybe she was trying to recreate a French windstorm. I don't know. I'm not going to explore any more of her music.
We have heard them because they play this on some random guy's YouTube mixes.
Okay. Short enough clips, I guess. They don't register with me.
Register, yeah. Stephanie then moved to LA to record her next album, but it did not come out until 1991, and it was a flop. As a result, Stephanie gave up her music career, but appeared on a very famous single by another artist in 1992. That's right, we're talking about Michael Jackson again. He and Teddy Riley wrote the song In the Closet for his Dangerous album, intending to have Madonna perform the female part. However, when Madonna offered some lyrics that were too provocative for Michael's taste, he decided not to include her in the recording. On the album, the female vocalist was credited as Mystery Girl. It was released as the third single from the album and hit number 8 in the UK, 6 on the Hot 100, and it topped the dance and R&B charts. But it wasn't until many years later that it was revealed Stephanie was the one performing the spoken word. These days, Stephanie spends her time on charitable efforts with a focus on fighting AIDS and HIV. Her brother Albert II is the reigning Prince of Monaco. She continues to hold the title of Princess and is 14th in line to the throne.
She seems like a very nice person, though, reading that stuff about her later years and what she's doing now. And she did have a tragic childhood. That's horrible. And I don't fault her for trying her hand at music. I just don't think it was for her. But yeah, that's so weird about In the Closet. I think I had maybe heard that about Madonna and Michael Jackson before, but that's so strange.
It was news to me. Also listening to the song all the way through like 2 or 3 times this week. I've never heard this song this much in my life. This is one that I would change it or ignore it. This song is not for me.
It's like opening spoken word, then it goes to Michael singing, then there's more spoken word in the middle. It's like, no, I don't like that. I mean, I don't really care for the song, period, but it's just too much. It's over the top. Talking about Madonna, though, I did want to say there was one scene in the We Are the World
documentary
where they are at the American Music Awards, and for some reason, her and Huey Lewis
are in the press line
or standing next to each other. And they're like trying to ask Huey Lewis about We Are the World. And he's like, well, I can't talk about that. And then Madonna kind of like gives this look like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, did Madonna not know about this? Like, was she not invited?
I thought she was. Oh. I can't remember what they said.
I don't remember them talking about her at all. I just thought that was so rude that they were just talking about it right in front of her face.
Right. That exact scene, though, is where me and Dave looked at each other and we're like, Madonna looked so good.
Oh.
She looked so great in that scene.
Yeah. She did. Okay. Finally, Dom says that Tina Yothers and Alyssa Milano are worth mentioning. Well, we already talked about Tina and her banger, Baby, I'm Back in Love Again. But yes, Alyssa Milano also had a recording career. She started out on the national touring production of Annie and then appeared in commercials and off-Broadway before landing the role of Samantha Maselli in Who's the Boss? But it was her role in a TV movie called The Canterville Ghost that led to her music career. Originally released in 1986, it gained a cult following in Japan several years later, and a Japanese record label signed her to a 5-record deal. Her debut, titled Look in My Heart, came out in March of 1989, and the title track was the first single. Her albums charted in Japan, but Alyssa never broke through in the US. She said at the time that she didn't have any interest in crossing over to the States because she would rather have her career be appreciated than laughed at. I guess that says something that she was cognizant of the
she
fact
knew.
She was
you know what
get
I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like she's just being frank and honest and
good
for
her.
Her.
Yeah. It's funny, like, she started in Annie, and I thought to myself, well, she must have been able to sing, but then I'm kind of thinking, well, lots of kids can sing. It doesn't exactly translate to, yes, you being able to sing when you're an adult. And she's another one where it's just like, what?
There's no singing.
Yeah, and there's no connection with the song. You're singing to someone about Look in My Heart, and you sound like you're, you know, reading the back of a cereal box or something. It's just like, what? But I think she was real big in Japan, or I don't know.
I have memories of that, too. You know, for the song Look in My Heart, I thought at least the music was interesting to me, mm-hmm. the instrumentation. I almost was like, is this Stock Aitken Waterman?
It could have been.
So she had that going for her. But mm-hmm. yeah, she needed some voice lessons. Is that mean? I'm not trying to be mean.
It is kind of honestly bizarre. You know, she had the looks. She had the popularity. Like, they could have turned her into a pop star if they had given her some more tools. You know, back then you couldn't use auto-tune or whatever it is. But you think that they would have been able to do something a little bit better than this.
Drown her out with backup singers, you know? Well, who knew after all this that Gloria Loring would come out smelling like a rose,
I know,
right?
Exactly.
I never thought I would, this would happen.
I think I didn't have a very high opinion of Gloria Loring just because of Friends and Lovers and just thinking that she just sang on the show, but she's got the chops. Good for her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Joe's going to be dancing to He Loves Me, He Loves Me Not.
I've already got the 45 on the way.
I'm never going to listen to any of these songs ever again. So there you go. I guess until we watch Rock and Roll Mom.
Oh, yeah. It's happening.
All right. Well, that's it. Next week, we are going to get back to, we have not done this in a long time, R&B superstars.
Oh, good. That's fun.
We still have many, many folks to get to on that list. Anything else, Joe?
I think we've covered everything we needed to.
Okay. Well, then you get to take us out this week.
Everybody, thanks for listening. We appreciate it so much. Hope you're doing well. Don't forget to take the time to be kind to others, kind to yourself. Enjoy every sandwich. If someone's not being nice to you, you say, better be good to me and give me that fish burger.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
We can't go on pretending day by day that someone somewhere soon make a change. We all are part of God's great big family. And the truth, you know, love is all we need.
Fish burger! Fish burger! Don't tell